Support for the Commodity Week podcast comes from Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, offering crop insurance, grain marketing, and commodity brokerage services. Learn more at www.sfarmmarketing.com.
This edition of Commodity Week was recorded Friday, March 27, 2009. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media, a broadcasting service of the College of Media at the University of Illinois.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
Traders spent much of the past week taking some premium out of soybean and wheat futures ahead of next Tuesday's prospective planning and quarterly grain stocks reports. What could they reveal? And how do we manage marketing risk? We'll discuss that and more today on Commodity Week. Welcome to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Later this half hour, we'll talk with Chip Flory, General Manager and Senior Analyst for Professional Farmers of America. Our panelists today are Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, Mike Georgie of Allendale in Mahama, Illinois, and Chris Corum of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois. Let's open today's discussion with this question. The equity market rallied to new highs for a third straight week, reaching a 23% retracement of the 2008 highs before backing off at week's end. Are equities out of the woods, and why or why not? Paul Cooley.
My opinion is, Dave, that the market does have a different tone. The stock and equity market's strong. If the administration would be a little kinder and just focus on the policies of the economy instead of talking about health care and other issues, we'd have a Dow Jones that'd be over 8,000 plus at this time.
It appears that the federal strategy through the private-public investment program is to stimulate demand by lowering interest rates. But historically, interest rates tend to rise in post-recession periods. Will the Fed's low interest rate plan be successful to turn the economy in the second half of this year to the upside? Mike Georgie.
Well, I think the interest rates are going to stay low for a while, and I think it is down here to help stimulate the economy. Is the recession over with? Is inflation right around the corner? No, I don't think so. And I think it's going to be until probably next year before we do see some inflation. And then at that point, we may see interest rates rise. But right now, you know, they're focusing on the economy. They're focusing on growth. They're wanting to get people back employed. Things that we're seeing is personal savings has gone up. So they're not spending. So what we need is we need people to start spending again and get the velocity of the money changing higher, which will cause the inflation, and then our interest rates will change. But, you know, some of the things that kept things excited last year was tight supplies. And with bean acres we're going to have and maybe the corn acres, that inflation's not going to play a big part of that until we get the economy rolling and people willing to spend money freely and on a more timely basis. So the interest rates aren't going to affect inflation or affect prices here in the near term.
We continue to watch closely the U.S. dollar for signs of hyperinflation. Chris Corum, you heard from Mike. Where do you think the dollar is headed in the second half of this year?
I agree with Mike as far as inflation. We do watch a little bit of C-SPAN at work there every so often, and I saw Mr. Bernanke talking to a Senate hearing late last week or the week before. He said he believes inflation's 3 years away. I kind of figured it was more like 18 to 24 months, but I would bow to his knowledge over such subjects other than mine. So as far as the dollar, I don't see it doing a lot in the next 6 months. You know, inflation is caused by an oversupply of money and an undersupply of goods and services, and I really don't see an undersupply of goods and services. We've had a lot of cutbacks and layoffs, but I don't think that that's part of the pie to come. I think the when the economy gets better, the dollar is going to be stronger, and I think looks like the U.S. economy is strengthening quicker than the overseas economy. So,
Paul, your take on the dollar?
I'm a little bearish, and I think we do have an oversupply of money there. And once we start seeing the economy pick up, I think we will see the dollar continue to drop down. But I think from a technical point of view, the top is in.
May corn had a high on the week of 403¾, a low of 384½. May corn finishing the week at 387, down 9½ from last week. December corn, the week's end at 416½. That's 8¾ lower from a week ago. May beans, a high on the week of 981¼, a low of 916. May soybeans finishing the week at 917. That's 35 lower than a week ago. The Nove beans at 860¾ are down 32¼ from last week. Tuesday, USDA releases its annual planting intentions report. The trade has a range of 9 million acres for corn and 6 million acres for soybeans. That suggests that someone is bound to be wrong the market on Tuesday. What are your estimates on corn and beans? And more importantly, based on your numbers, what orders do you want producers to have in place for Tuesday morning, Chris?
Well, I kind of agree with average trade guesses. I think that's what's come in. I guess I was pretty surprised. The first numbers that came out were Informa, and they came out with 81 million corn acres and 81 million beans. And if you were to look at that, you better be getting some beans sold before the report on Tuesday. I don't think that those numbers are too correct. I would have to agree with the average trade guess is what they'll come out with. And as far as what people need to do, I think if you don't have any 2009 beans sold, that may be something you better be thinking about doing here.
Well, Allendale did our research with our producers, and we come up with an 85.4 million acre crop, which will, if we have 156 bushel an acre, we're going to have a 1.2, almost a 1.3 carryover in corn, and 80.4 million in beans, which means about a 500 million carryover in beans. So, you know, I mean, we've been doing puts as far as old crop corn. I think people need to have a put on going into Tuesday's report, just in case we do have a big downside, just a short-term protection. If it's a bullish report, get out of them. And as far as new crop goes, we've been buying puts and selling a farther out of the money call and a farther out of the money put, kind of a box strategy where you have a bottom put in, but you still have a potential to sell at a higher price.
Paul, your take on the acreage report?
Well, you know, number one, we've been very pessimistic in the economic situation. The weather has turned from being nice to be quite wet in all three major growing areas, wheat, the Midwest and the Southeast and Delta. My general impression is that it's a good number, the average trade guest estimate, 84.4, and the average guess on bean, 79.62. The problem here, Dave, is that there's still a lot of things that can determine the final outcome.
I'm going to stay with you, Paul, and ask you, how much credence do you think we should give to the spring wheat planting intentions number?
Well, definitely we put a fork in the bull market, in the wheat market this week. You know, it was a wonderful strength in being talked about, but when they started talking about 1 to 2 inches of rain in those western areas of Kansas, the market melted. And then finally on Wednesday, Thursday, people realized that that spring wheat area was, you know, in trouble and lots of flooding and wet conditions. My hunch here is that when it's all said and done, those dry areas in the west won't get as much rain as predicted. And unfortunately, it looks like a really roller coaster thumping up in the spring area of the Midwest. So that probably augurs for some more oil seeds, and that's a little bearish soybeans.
May wheat a high on the week of 563, a low of 503. May wheat finishing the week at 507 and a quarter, down 43 from last week. July 515 and a half, down 42 and a half from a week ago. And as Paul was saying, wheat futures did spend much of the week on the defensive. It tested a trend line through the December-March lows. Chris, is wheat headed for under $5?
Well, I think if we could keep it around $5, and I know there's support at that level, I think if we keep it there, I think we'll get a little boost. I think the numbers I saw today were they think in the spring areas we could lose a 500,000 acres in the Dakotas and Minnesota. I think if that happens, that's a bullish trend towards wheat. I kind of agree with Paul on the winter wheat areas. There's also supposed to be, I guess, 12 to 18 inches coming to that area, possibly this weekend or early in the week. So that'll help protect, I think, some of the winter wheat acres. So, yeah, I think if we can hold $5, I think we'll be okay. I think we'll hold that.
We have a quarterly grain stocks report on Tuesday as well. Could it have a surprise, Mike?
Well, I think the only surprise that we're looking at is that the soybeans could be a bigger usage in the fourth quarter as far as that goes. Other than that, no, we think quarterly corn stocks are going to be right up there at that 6.9 billion area. And the only thing I see is maybe a larger usage in soybeans.
November soybeans made its weekly high on Monday past at 914 and three quarters, and essentially that was it. The rest of the week, harvest beans were on the defensive, retracing back to the 50% level from the January highs to the March lows. Are the highs in on beans for the spring, Paul?
Well, good question. They could be. A couple things. Argentine's economic situation and the farmers' strike down there has been a big boost early the last 2 weeks. It did give the farmers here in the Midwest every opportunity in the world to move some higher-priced beans into the marketplace. Aggressive selling in new crop beans was noted. We sold a lot of mini contracts. There was a lot of call writing, and there was all types of strategies being done in the soybean market, new crop soybeans. My hunch is that if you could sold your cash beans, some new crop beans above 850, I think that's a wonderful place to start the game.
Mike?
As far as old crop soybeans goes, I think the top may have been in. I think there's a possibility that we could rally maybe on inflation, but the Argentina situation is they're going to get their stuff harvested, so they're going to get it out of the fields. We started at 950 on hedging on the board on our soybeans, and I think if you can get them hedged now is a good time to do it.
Let's talk about basis for a moment, and again, in context of the reports next week, what will happen post-report on the basis, Paul?
Well, a couple things. The easy question on soybeans, I think the bean basis is going to be fairly strong. That's the easy one. The hard one is the corn market. We have seen a lot of corn move in the marketplace. There were people even offering free delayed price out there in certain markets, and there are definitely markets in there that are offering some pretty good basis levels. The hope here is that we will continue to see a pickup of demand. The farmers have been rather stubborn marketers of corn, and they did move corn last week. The basis levels, in my opinion, are on the steady to firm side.
Well, I think corn-wise, I think I agree with Paul. I think it's going to stay strong. A lot of the guys that have had grain, trying to get them to move some, get some money, we've had them do some basis contracts on some of the old crop soybeans, try to take some of their money up front just to get them some working capital. I think I've seen some tight basis, as tight as I've seen it in the last few years. So I would agree with that. I think on the bean side, I think I see that basis getting nothing but sloppier.
Live cattle had a high on the week of 86.10, a low of 84.25. April live cattle, that is, and it finished the week at 84.32.5, down 87.5 from last week. April feeders finishing the week at 93.12.5, down 65 from a week ago. April lean hogs, the high there, 61.85 on the week, the low 59.75, finishing the week 60.47.5, down 127.5 from last week. Was there anything in Friday's hogs and pigs report we should be keeping an eye on, Mike?
Well, I think overall it was neutral to bullish. The numbers came in just about the same. The only thing that we see is for the May, June, probably July contracts, the production and the per pig, per litter was higher than they anticipated. So we, you know, they've kind of had them higher price, so we may see some pullback in them. But other than that, it was pretty much neutral to a bullish report.
We'll be back in 2 minutes with our guest, Chip Flory, Professional Farmers of America.
I'm Steve Hilberg with the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center, located at the Illinois State Water Survey in Champaign. This was another warm week across the state of Illinois, with temperatures running 8 to 11 degrees above normal and temperatures climbing into the 60s and 70s on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday of this week. Even after the passage of a cold front on Wednesday, temperatures only dropped back to near normal levels for the rest of the week. A major storm affected much of the central United States this week, bringing blizzards, severe weather, and heavy rain. By the time the system entered Illinois, though, a lot of the air had been let out of its proverbial balloon. A band of 2 to 3 inches of rain did fall from west central to northern Illinois, with amounts falling off quickly to around a half inch in the east and south. The heavy rain up northwest did prompt some flash flood warnings in northwestern Illinois, and a few severe thunderstorms were also reported in northern Illinois, causing some wind damage. An active weather pattern will see out the end of March and see in the beginning of April. One system will be affecting Illinois this weekend and will be followed by yet another storm system in the late Monday to Tuesday time period. Another storm will begin to affect Illinois on Wednesday and bring precipitation to most of the state on next Thursday. While there will be brief warm-ups this week ahead of each weather system, temperatures will likely average near normal. A big change will come near the end of the week when much colder air is pulled into Illinois behind the last system to move through, with cold weather likely to persist through next weekend. For the NOAA Midwestern Regional Climate Center in Champaign, I'm Steve Hilberg.
You're listening to Commodity Week. This is Dave Dickey. Our panelists today are Mike Giorgi, Chris Corum, and Paul Cooley. Joining us today by telephone is Chip Flory, General Manager and Senior Analyst for Professional Farmers of America. Thanks for being with us today, Chip.
You bet, Dave. Thank you.
We have two big reports out on Tuesday. Will the trade be surprised, or is the acreage dialed in at 84.2 million corn and 79.7 beans?
Yeah, even if somebody was right with their guess on corn acres and soybean acres going into this report, even if they're right, they're going to be surprised. The uncertainty on this report is unbelievable. Huge range on the pre-report trade guess on corn and on soybeans. So just a lot of uncertainty, and that's what we've been talking about all winter, you know, basically since last fall when it took so long to get that crop out of the ground and we didn't get much fall field work done, much fertilizer down. So just a huge amount of uncertainty. And you know, these are barely going to be benchmark numbers, I think. The market conditions, the weather conditions, the input prices, even at this late date, are still going to have a major impact on just how much corn we get in the ground and how much ground is left over for soybeans at that point.
The big question here I have for you, Chip, it's planting time out here in Iowa, and the administration, the Secretary of Agriculture, wants higher blends in ethanol. Carol Browner says, well, I'm going to think about it and test more. What political angle are they playing, and will it work?
You know, Obama has never said anything that makes us think that he does not favor ethanol. Okay, he's always been an ethanol supporter. We understand that Colin Peterson, head of the ag panel in the House from Minnesota, Democrat from Minnesota, went in and had a discussion with Lisa Jackson at EPA about boosting the blend. We couldn't get him to say anything on the record, but we do understand that he was very pleased when he left that meeting. Certainly suggests that he sees some opportunity to get a 12% or 13% blend in place. But we also understand that there was a letter sent to the Obama administration signed by 56 different groups, ranging from food groups to livestock groups, engine makers, so on and so forth, encouraging the administration to not increase the maximum blend. And then at the same time, we're also hearing word that some refiners, some gasoline refineries, are already hiring their Clean Air Act attorneys to try to get some kind of a block on a boost because of the warranties that are on vehicles and small engines. You know, they're okay up to a 10% blend. But after you get past that 10% blend, what they're concerned about is that any engine problems could then come back and be blamed on ethanol, and that might lead back to the refiners that are doing the blending. So there's a meeting, a subcommittee hearing next week on the RFS. But there's lots of things lining up on ethanol, and while that's all going on, the blend incentive is increasing out there. We've got wholesale gas prices over $2 now. Ethanol price in Chicago area, for example, about $1.50, $1.55, something like that. So there's plenty of incentive to go ahead and blend. And then the RIN market, the renewable identification number market, just got hammered this week. The 2008 RINs were trading at 13, 14 cents. Now they're down to 7.5, 8 cents. The 2009 RINs are in that 12.5, 13 cent range, and that's down 6, 8 cents just from last week. So there's plenty of it appears that there's plenty of incentive for blending right now.
Hey, Chip. Yeah. This is Chris.
Yeah.
Question for you. Mr. Obama, I understand, or President Obama, I should address him as, has always been friendly ethanol as far as we've known. I'm assuming, though, that he would be even more friendly cellulosic ethanol, and that most of what I read is cellulosic is pretty much ready to go right now. I mean, have you heard that, and what do you think part that will play maybe in the next year or two?
Okay, first off, yes, he is more supportive to cellulosic ethanol than corn-based ethanol. Yes, there has been good progress on the technology behind cellulosic ethanol, but the credit crunch is biting them in the butt because they can't get any money to build larger pilot projects and to prove the efficiency of their process. If they can't get the money to prove the efficiency, then we're not going to see any more progress on cellulosic ethanol. The credit crunch is probably putting cellulosic back, 18, 24 months. It's a big problem for that part of the industry right now.
Chip, I guess we're got introduced to ethanol, so let's stay with it. We talked about it. I mean, I think some of the farmers out there are holding on to their grains because they think, you know, we talked about inflation. They think inflation is going to come and prices are going to go up. But getting to the ethanol idea, how much will it really help the cash price considering, you know, we've doubled our ending stocks of ethanol over the last year? And if we do, you know, get the mandate or the blend to 13%, how much would you think it's going to help the cash price of corn?
Not much. I don't think that there's a whole lot of help there. Going to 12%, 13% just makes it easier to get to the mandated corn-based ethanol usage level. That's the reason for the boost. It's not designed to increase the amount of corn that's going to be used for ethanol. It is simply a plan to make it easier to hurdle that blend wall and to get to the mandated corn-based ethanol usage pace.
Chip, the livestock industry last year got beat up bad. Are we ever going to see them come out of this bad cycle?
Yes. We're still a ways off, though. I think cattle are probably closer than hogs yet. The numbers are coming down on cattle. That placement number, I think, was in last Friday's report, in the cattle on feed report, came in below trade expectations, and I think it's just simply because supplies are tightening up. Yeah, you look at the cold storage report, and you've got beef stocks down about where we were a year ago. So we're producing less beef. It's a hamburger economy, so we're still selling beef, but we're suffering on the high-value cuts. But nonetheless, we're using the beef up. We're getting into a time frame right now where boxed beef prices ought to rally, seasonally based, and if we can get a nice $6, $8, $10 rally in the choice heavyweight boxes, you know, if we get a $10 rally, you can expect a $6 rally in the cash cattle, and that would go a long ways towards it may not bring profits back, but it would sure make things a lot better there. Hogs, the hogs and pigs report that was out today, the March-May farrowing intentions, or excuse me, the June-August farrowing intentions down 4% from a year ago. With the number of pigs per litter that we're getting, call it 102, 103%, that's going to keep our hog supply, if those intentions are right, that'll keep our hog supplies down about 2% from year-ago levels. And if we can do that and find, you know, we might have to start giving away some pork chops based on that last cold storage report. We've got some big pork stocks out there, but if we can keep those hog numbers in the 2%, 3% down from year-ago level, we might have a chance of seeing some strength come in. But a lot of that's already factored into the summer month markets. You've got, the June hogs are already in that 71, 72-cent range, and that it really feels like we've got a lot of the tighter numbers already factored in.
Thank you, Chip.
You bet, Dave. Thank you.
That's Chip Flory, General Manager and Senior Analyst for Professional Farmers of America. And now a chance for a quick final word from our panelist, Paul Cooley.
The buy-sell pad is still a wonderful way to boost the bottom line.
Chris Corum.
I believe that you probably better get some puts on and maybe sell some new crop soybeans by maybe Monday.
Mike Georgie.
Yeah, I think you got to use some put options for Monday just for short term, just to find out what this report's going to tell us.
We would like to thank our panel, Chris Corum of Strategic Farm Marketing in Champaign, Illinois, Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services in Oakland, Illinois, and Mike Georgie of Allendale in Mahama, Illinois. And that wraps up this week's edition of Commodity Week. Remember, you can access Commodity Week programs and listen to our daily agricultural programming on your computer. Our site on the World Wide Web is WILLAG.org. This is Dave Dickey.
Commodity Week is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM 580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at agrigold.com or at 800-262-7333. And by ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.